The home of Notre Dame football. 96.1 WSBT, South Bend, the sports leader. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is dribble.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Fumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Coming to you live from Five Star Dive Bar, 526 South Main Street in Elkhart. Glad to have you with us for another Friday here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Evan Sharpley not here today, but I am joined by another. You know, I don't think I would put you into the chucker classification like Evan and Tom Noy. I mean, you're not gonna put it up every time. You're not quite the point guard though, either. So I'm not exactly sure where you would fall. Vince D'Addario is here today.
Well, standing at a stout 5'8 on a good day, I was a defensive stopper at power forward back in middle school.
Okay.
And I was not a shooter by any stretch of the imagination.
And noted stock blocker as a wide receiver in an option offense.
The extended tackle. That is correct. Right. I could block in the open field with the best of them, yes.
That's right. I did a few of those my own back in the day. So good to have you with us. And we've got a lot of Notre Dame conversation, of course, fall camp, and the Fighting Irish wrapped up Camp Culver yesterday. They are off today. We got to go down and watch practice number five.
Five, yeah.
I had to think about it for a second because they started Sunday, which is unusual. But so they started practice number five yesterday. We're going to talk about that here in just a minute. Also, coming up here at about 12:30, we're going to be joined by a former Notre Dame pitcher who just got traded to the Chicago Cubs last week. Dave Phelps is going to join us. So we're excited to be joined by him coming up here at about 12:30. The Cubs are in Cincinnati, and they picked up a big series opening win, especially considering their luck on the road this season. So it was a big – they got double-digit runs last night. Castellanos, the newcomer who also came to him in a trade deadline deal, and Ian Happ, who's been at AAA for most of the year, both exploded last night. And then even Jonathan Lucroy, the new catcher, with some offense last night.
It was all the new faces pretty much providing all the offensive power, which is what they've been lacking. You know, the pitching has – it's been lack of late, I would say. But in the past, you know, throughout the season, the pitching really hasn't been the issue. It's been run production and, you know, the offense. So, hey – these new guys were picked up for a reason, and they're starting to produce. So that was really exciting. I think they were just shy of 20 hits last night.
That sounds right.
It was. I remember seeing 17, but I think there was a hit or two after that. So it was right around 20. I was going to look it up, but pretty impressive offensive showing. I don't know if you watched the game at all, but
just parts of it.
The Reds brought in a position player to throw.
At
the end, because it was.
I didn't see that.
It was out of control. And he was throwing about 40 miles an hour. And he was making the Cub hitters look pretty silly.
Yeah.
Because they're just not used to 40 miles an hour.
Is that when Javi Baez came in and hit left-handed?
Yes.
Was it against that same guy? I had seen that he came in and hit left-handed last night.
Yeah. But. And they were, because the ball was literally on an arc coming in, and they were like chopping down at it. And it was just, it was hilarious to watch. Major league hitters just look so silly.
I can only imagine. So, again, Dave Phelps, currently of the Chicago Cubs, traded from the Toronto Blue Jays last week, played at Notre Dame from 2006 through 2008 for both Paul Maneri and Dave Schrag, a former teammate of the guy who usually sits next to me, Evan Sharpley.
That's
but
right.
With major league guys, their schedule is fairly tight, so we it took a little bit of work, but this is the time slot that we could make work this week, so glad that we'll be joined by him in a little bit less than 30 minutes here on the phone from Cincinnati. Vince, you were with me on SportsBeat a couple of nights ago. I'll just set it up for our listeners. Of course, you filled in from time to time on both this show as well as SportsBeat over the last, really more recently, over the last few months. Also, you've done Mishawaka basketball with me for the last couple of years here on WSBT. And one of the new things that you'll be doing, we'll get to hear more of Vince's Golden Tones.
Wow.
Mishawaka football on Friday nights this season because you're no longer coaching high school football. So you'll jump up there with me in the booth. You'll have some games. Scott Bovenkirk, the Hall of Fame head coach, will have some games. So I'll have the joy of being with both of you guys at different points throughout this Mishawaka football season.
No sarcasm there at all, right?
No, none at all. None at all. So, I mean, but that's going to be fun. It's going to be good to have you in the booth, and we're looking forward to seeing where this Mishawaka football team goes this year. After a magnificent run to semi-state last year, they're moving up to 5A this year, so how will that change things? They'll kick off the season 2 weeks from tonight against Portage. That'll be a 7:30 Eastern time kickoff here on WSBT.
Well, not to dive too far into Mishawaka sports, but I mean, there's going to be a lot of changes in all three of the major boys' sports because they just graduated so many of those seniors.
They did.
I mean, the football team's going to have a lot
Harness,
of, yeah, the
Fisher.
Football team's going to have new faces. The basketball team's going to have new faces. We did some of the baseball games when they were at the regional, and I mean, the semi-state, and they're going to have a bunch of new faces. So it's going to be interesting to see who steps up and, you know, takes that mantle into this new school year. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Yep. So that'll be, we'll have the first game together 2 weeks from tonight, Mishawaka hosting Portage. And then another new thing for you, you've been down at the two Notre Dame football practices that I've been at and a good chunk of the media has been at Sunday and yesterday, and you're doing some work now for Blue and Gold, blueandgold.com.
Yeah, joined the BGI family here about a week ago officially, and as I mentioned on SportsBeat, Brian Driscoll and I have known each other for a long time. When he heard that I was kind of retiring from coaching, at least for now, he's like, dude, we got to get you on board. I'm like, okay. Right, sure. And then all of a sudden I'm on board, so I'm really excited. But yeah, we've been at practice the last two out of the five practices at Culver, which being down there for a second practice at Culver is a brand new thing. We've only ever been down there for
one that's
practice,
true. So, it's usually one there and then back on campus right away. So we got to see the first Culver practice Sunday, the last Culver practice yesterday, and we'll get into that in just a second. But also want to mention, of course, that we are 24 days away from kickoff. It'll be Notre Dame at Louisville, September 2nd. That is Labor Day.
Labor Day.
Of course, here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, all Notre Dame football games. And you'll be a part of our game day coverage, hosting game day with Tim Growl this season.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun, being on campus for home games and just feeling the electricity. I'm really looking forward to Tim and I, you know, talking to former players and people associated with the team and just having a lot of fun out there. Should be great. I'm really looking forward to it. I've really escalated my I don't know, association with Notre Dame football this year. So
absolutely,
it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a new direction for me, and I get to put my fan hat aside. And well, maybe not completely, you know, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep, and we're looking forward to having you. Of course, game day, a staple on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It'll be Vince D'Addario and Tim Growl out there this year as Evan Sharpley, again, my typical co-host of this show, away today, but he's stepped aside from that for this season. Okay, so let's get into some of what we saw. The big thing that came out of yesterday's practice was, I mean, and it happened fairly early in practice, Cole Kmet goes up in the end zone, the tight end, who we all had such great expectations for this season. He goes up, he's battling with Alohi Gilman, he makes a beautiful catch on a jump ball in the front left corner of the end zone, but then he comes down on his right shoulder, and immediately you could tell it was not going to be good. And as it turns out, Irish Illustrated, the first to report, it's a broken collarbone after he came down hard on that right shoulder, and he's going to be out for 3 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, it looks like the target date to come back is September 21st, from what I
Georgia,
which
potentially.
Georgia, which would be great.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. That would be fantastic. I think it might be, I don't know, a little optimistic, But, yeah, as soon as he came.
Well, the collarbones, though, guys, right. Guys come back from those quicker than other.
As soon as he came down,
yeah.
It was either a pop shoulder or a collarbone.
Yeah.
I mean, the immediate right arm was immobilized. He couldn't move it. But, what a nice catch. You could just, as soon as he caught it, I was like, man, this is going to be great to watch all season.
Yeah,
and then he didn't get up. And I was like,
right down on that shoulder.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
But in his absence, I think Brock Wright had an amazing day of practice.
Yeah, he did.
And I think the tight end group as a whole had a great day of practice. I was impressed with them stepping up and doing a great job. If it's going to happen to any position, I think the tight end position can at least absorb that for now. If it was the whole season, I think it's a different conversation. But since it's only going to be the first few weeks, I think it's going to be okay. I mean, I think we could put together a team at WSBT and beat Louisville. So I'm not really worried about that particular game.
We got Sharpley at quarterback.
I mean, we could
do
it. We
got you out stock blocking.
I could stock block with the best of them still.
That's right.
So I'm not necessarily worried about that game. So I think that they can absorb that for now. And if he does come back healthy in week three, I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, he has been kind of the combination. He's really the whole package. And Brian Kelly has had a lot of big things to say about him going back to the spring, that they expected Tyler Eifert, Kyle Rudolph type year from this guy. And, I mean, what we've seen so far, he is both consistent
yep.
in the way he catches the ball, his positioning, his routes and everything. And then also at times – spectacular, just like yeah. on that very same play when he went up battling against Alohi Gilman to make that catch, and what was a beautiful catch, and then unfortunately he just came down on the wrong spot on that shoulder. So I think you've got some consistency with Brock Wright.
Mm-hmm.
He, as you said, he had a good practice yesterday,
yep.
did some good things, maybe not quite the same ceiling.
Well, there's a reason he's number two.
No, I know, and that's
no
what
question.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to –
sure.
When we sort of compare what we've seen from these different
sure.
guys, Komet is more the whole package. Right, there's a lot of consistency there, but again, maybe not the same ceiling, highlight-type material
sure.
that you're going to get from Cole Komet, although maybe with some more opportunities we could see that. But then you've got Tommy Tremble as the
Bingo.
Number three guy, and again, like – when you look at Tommy Tremble, okay, so yesterday he starts off with a couple of drops – in some of the one-on-one type stuff, and you're going, eh. But then a little bit later, he makes a spectacular catch with one hand. So with him, I mean, there's a huge ceiling there. It's a matter of just being, I think, more consistent throughout.
Well, and I think him having the opportunity, I mean, he's going to have more opportunities in game one and game two now. And his speed is elite. I mean, he has elite speed.
Mm-hmm.
For a wide receiver.
And it's still weird to look at because he wears number 24
Correct.
With that body that he's in. And it's still like you're doing a double take, but we're going to see more of him now. So I think there'll be less double take and more, okay, Tommy Tremble.
I mean, he's a matchup nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, he's what, 6'3", 237, and he can run like a 4.5 or 4.6 40. I mean, he's fast. And so that's going to be a matchup nightmare. So that's going to be fun to watch him. Brock Wright's your big blocking. It still can go up and make a catch. So you're going to have two differing styles at tight end, and they were running a little five wide at one point during practice, and seeing those guys out and those mismatches, I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch to see how Chip Long kind of uses those two guys to his advantage in the first two games.
Yeah, and so and that is Chip Long's position. That is the position he coaches, and so we expected
yeah.
to see some elevation from it this year, and so it'll be we'll obviously be following that. When you look at as you were talking about the potential return for Cole Komet, the initial, I think it's always 3 to 6 weeks when you get
right.
this kind of injury. They'll put a pin and that kind of stuff and see how it stays together. The start of the season is 24 days away, so that's obviously a little bit more than 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then Notre Dame has an extra weekend in between.
That is true.
That September 2nd opener and then the home opener against New Mexico on September 14th. And then 6 weeks, as you said, would be September 21st when Notre Dame goes down to Athens to take on Georgia. So,
that's you're right. That is absolutely possible that he could be back by Georgia, and that's where you want him. I mean, you want a huge road game like that.
Yeah.
I mean, probably a top five team in the country, a top 10 for sure, depending on the first 2 weeks of the season. I mean, you
Well, and it could be kind of that, you know, sort of X factor guy, because even though they've got some film on him from last year, he wasn't the guy. There wouldn't be necessarily as much, so that would be something that Georgia hasn't seen on film if he ends up coming back.
And if you're going to have that injury, I'd much rather have him have that injury first week of camp.
Yeah.
As opposed to the middle of the season.
Than Louisville or even in the middle of the season for that matter. So also the other notable thing from yesterday, not nearly as serious, it doesn't sound like anyway, but later in practice when they were doing the live stuff, Alohi Gilman took a hard hit in the end zone on a one-yard touchdown run by Jafar Armstrong. And then so he came over to the sideline. He was going to come over to the sideline anyway. It was a goal line play, 1 yard. Armstrong scored the touchdown on kind of a physical run, which was a nice physical run, actually, between the tackles.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we will. So we won't get sidetracked on that just yet. But then Alohi comes over to the sideline. It looked like they were doing concussion protocol on him. They had him, like, standing on one foot to see how his balance was, holding an arm out, and then they kind of took the flashlight and looked in his eyes and all that different kind of stuff. And again, when you're talking about a hard pop like that, probably good they have today off, so you don't have to worry about today. They can kind of keep examining him, and it'll be interesting to see if he's out there or not tomorrow. I mean, he was having a great practice. I mean, just a typical Alohi Gilman.
Right.
Right. I think there's a lot that we probably take for granted with him already.
I would agree with that. he makes the play. He makes all the plays. He's everywhere. I mean, he's a leader on that defense. There's no question. He leads with I don't know if bravado is the right word, but when you're good and you know it, you can lead with that kind of bravado.
At the very least, confidence.
Confidence.
Whether or not it's – yeah, I mean, at the very least, he's confident.
He's not cocky.
In what he's doing, and he's got reason to be. He's a leader out there.
100%. And if he's out for a little while, it's not as big of a deal because, you know, obviously it's early in camp, which is fine. They could give him tomorrow off, and I don't think it means
there's this freshman. Anything. There's this freshman I think I've heard of.
He wears 14.
Yeah, that's right.
I think.
And that's still weird, too, because I'm used to seeing Devin Studstill out there with his 14, and they're about the same measurements and body type. I mean, even though Hamilton is a little bit taller. He made a big splash with three interceptions on Sunday, and then he came out with another interception yesterday.
And he has looked every bit the five-star freshman, and I will emphasize freshman, that he has been touted to be. He got burned a few times in one-on-ones, okay? But you're not going to put a freshman in a one-on-one situation in a game. That's just not going to happen. He's not ready for that. But if you stick him in center field and you just ask him to backpedal and fly to the football and make a play, he can do that for you.
He'll do it
right now.
He's got good instincts, you can tell, too.
There's a reason that he was starting with the nickel group and the dime group at that free safety position. They're bringing Alohi Gilman down into the box, and they're putting him back at safety with Elliott. And it's kind of a beautiful thing.
That is.
I mean,
that's really a fun package when you think about all the athleticism they have on the field with that.
If that's what they end up deciding to do for their nickel, because we always talk about who's going to be the nickel, who's going to be the nickel. Well, it turns out Kyle Hamilton's your nickel because they're going to bring him in and put him at safety. Okay, I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and so then when we look at how they lined up on offense yesterday, we'll just kind of go through it real quickly. Ian Book, the quarterback, no surprise with the first-team offense. He had Jafar Armstrong at running back with Tony Jones Jr. also rotating in, which, again, to be expected. I think we're going to see. I don't know if it's going to be 50-50, but I am anxious to watch that because I think we've all pretty much thought it's going to be Jafar Armstrong. And for the most part, again, he's out there first, and I like what I've seen from him just in terms of some physicality and things like that. But I think Tony Jones Jr., I would say, don't forget about Tony Jones Jr. because I think we're going to see a lot of him too.
And he had a really good day, Tony Jones.
He did.
And he was out there first in the team session, I believe, when they went 11-on-11 at the end. He was the first back out there.
Had a nice run.
He had a very nice run. I mean,
a little cut that he made after kind of getting to the second level.
He's a one-cut guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not going to be juking you and anything else. He's going to be a stick his foot in the ground and go, and that's exactly what he did. And it's exciting.
But I like that, too, because he's going to hit the hole first.
Absolutely.
And then if he makes that cut, then he's got some room to go.
And just to explain how we've been watching practice, the Sunday practice we were at, it was just helmets. You can pretty much forget about watching the lines. You can pretty much forget about watching linebackers and running backs because you're just not going to get much out of it. yesterday was full pads. So now you can start focusing on that front seven. Defensively, you can start focusing on the running backs. And they did not disappoint. Yep. They did not disappoint. It was fun to watch.
Not at all. And then the receivers, Chase Claypool, Chris Finck in the slot, Michael Young. Again, Cole Kmet, when they lined up with the first team before his injury, he was the first team guy. And then you had Brock Wright kind of sliding in there more later on. And then the offensive line, Liam Eichenberg at left tackle, Aaron Banks at left guard, Jarrett Patterson with a T, of course, at center, right guard Tommy Kramer, and right tackle Robert Hainsey. So just your thoughts, I guess, first of all, on the offensive line, because that was one of the things that you were really impressed with, and I was too yesterday.
I thought the offensive line played amazingly. Now, that doesn't mean that those touted defensive ends didn't have their moments, because they certainly did. I mean, you can't block those guys all day. But the pockets that they had for Ian were really, really good. I didn't think there was much of a push in the interior defensive line, and I think that has a lot to do with the offensive line.
Well, and that's what we've got to try to sort out, sure. And what the coaching staff is going to have
Absolutely.
To sort out as well. How much of it is this offensive line is that good? How much of it is the defensive line and the linebacking core? And we'll get to more of that when we talk about defense. But how much of one, how much of the other?
I agree. I just thought that the offensive line, especially in one-on-ones, we chart, you know, everyone on one-on-one down there. And I was looking at the chart, and there was probably, you know, 20 to 25 reps. And I think the defense won on, like, four of those, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's saying a lot. One-on-ones as an offensive lineman is not an easy task. And I thought that they played very, very well. I think they're playing much better as a group and individually. So it's going to be interesting to see how Jarrett Patterson does at center. I think, you know.
I mean, right now.
He's doing great.
Against a junior.
He's doing fantastic.
Yeah. Kurt Heinisch on the other side.
Right. I think he's doing fantastic. So, yeah, the offensive line I thought played really, really well. Even in the run game, there was some pretty sizable holes there for the running backs, and they took advantage of it.
Second string offense, Phil Djurkovic at quarterback, the running backs Kyron Williams and Jameer Smith. And Smith, as was reported, broke his hand earlier this week, and he had a cast, a green cast on his hand. And it was hard to spot at first because it was green, because that's what I was kind of looking for. And then it's like, okay, green cast. But, I mean, he didn't seem to show really any ill effects of having a cast on his hand. He looked pretty solid, I thought.
I thought most of the running backs, all of the running backs looked solid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously a lot of that has to do with the offensive line, but I thought they were running with good pad level. I thought that their cuts were good. I was very, very impressed. And if you didn't know his hand was broken, I don't think you would have known.
No. The receivers, Joe Wilkins, Braden Lindsey, Lawrence Keys, and we haven't necessarily I thought that maybe it would be of this next group of receivers, it would be Keys who might be standing out, but it's kind of been Braden Lindsey so far, doing a nice job in space and doing some stuff after the catch.
Well, he's got speed to burn. There's no question about that. And I think him and Keys both are just getting in this year two in the offense, year two in college, period. I just think that they're getting that much more comfortable, and they're going to see a lot of time. There's no question. Yes, they're running with the second team, but there's going to be a rotation there. Those guys are going to be Ian Book's best friends, because what does Ian Book do well? Short, accurate passes, get it out of his hand quickly. He's going to be able to put the ball in those guys' hands, and they're going to do something with it after the catch, and it's going to be fun to watch.
The second string offensive line, Josh Lugg at left tackle, Trevor Ruland at left guard, Colin Grunhardt at center, right guard John Dirksen, and right tackle Andrew Kristofic. And Colin Grunhardt, a guy who missed the spring with an injury, and I mean, he's not the biggest guy. He's like a little over 6 foot tall, maybe 289 pounds, so he's not huge, but I mean, and obviously his dad played here at Notre Dame,
sure.
Played for the Kansas City Chiefs and that whole thing. But, I mean, he's a walk-on, but he's running as the number two center right now. I mean, he looks like a guy who could easily go play at a smaller school and be starting and playing a lot of football.
Oh, there's no question. And, frankly, as the number two center behind a guy who's a first-time starter, he might get some time at Notre Dame. I mean, it's definitely possible. You know, who knows what happens if somebody goes down and how they switch things around. But he's absolutely holding his own, you know, at this level. And he may not be a walk-on for much longer. I mean, if they have scholarships to burn here, you know, coming into the season, he might be able to – he might find himself in that position, but you would never know that he was a walk-on the way he plays. Maybe by his size, by looking at him,
yeah,
but not by the way he plays the game.
With Vince D'Addario, Sean Steyers, Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Evan is out today, so we're going to be talking to Chicago Cubs and former Notre Dame pitcher Dave Phelps here in a few minutes, but wanted to finish up some thoughts on the offense first. And so Phil Jurkovec was easily probably the most scrutinized guy from day one.
Sure, and the spring.
And there were more wobbles with the ball on Sunday. There were still some yesterday, but, I mean, I thought that from Sunday to yesterday, night and day, a different-looking guy. He didn't – Sunday he looked like he was forcing – not forcing balls into spots, but –
forcing the ball, period.
Trying to guide the ball. Yeah, try to aim the ball in there and maybe just trying to show too much early on. He looked like that was gone, had a different kind of confidence, threw the ball better both short and deep. Now, I mean, it wasn't like perfect spirals every time, but again, I mean, he ran the offense well, and he looked like a different guy out there already.
Man, watching the touch that he had on the ball yesterday, well, like you said, was night and day different than it was on Sunday. He got a lot more reps yesterday than even Ian Book did. I mean, he got more reps than Ian did.
No, it was still with the second team.
It was still with the second team, but when they were doing like one-on-ones in the red zone and they were doing one-on-ones, he got the bulk of the throws.
Yeah, because there was some stuff. Yeah, when they would do some of that one-on-one, it was like Book would get one or two snaps, and then you'd see Jurkovec for like five or six.
And before people start freaking out, that's what you do in camp. Your starter – quarterbacks throw a lot of balls. That's a reason.
Yeah, it's day five, and they've thrown a lot this week.
There's a reason there's like six quarterbacks in NFL camps, okay, because you don't want your starter throwing 300 balls a day, okay? So there's a reason that he got more than Ian did, okay?
It's like it makes me think back to the movie For Love of the Game. I heard an interview with Kevin Costner where he was obviously a pitcher in that game, and so they were filming for days after days, and by day, whatever it was like he'd been throwing 200 pitches a day for a week, and they had to give him some painkillers at the end of the week because he had to keep throwing pitches for camera. So
that shows you that there weren't baseball people in charge of that shoot, okay? Because that's craziness.
That's right.
But, yeah, so if there was probably a little arm fatigue or he was on a pitch count or whatever – but it allowed Phil to show off what he's good at. And he did the touch in the end zone on some of those red zone plays was excellent.
Some nice fades.
His long balls, there were times where the receivers should have kept running and they slowed down. It would have been a touchdown by 10 yards.
And the interception that he did have that Kyle Hamilton had was during a live portion of practice. And it was – he threw it up. And it was down inside the 10-yard line, maybe around the 5, where Hamilton kind of just playing center field, came flying out of nowhere and picked it off.
Which is what he's good at. I mean, that's exactly what the staff is asking
him to do. Just the instinct he has,
absolutely. And it was a little overthrown, and he was right there to pick it off. So, I mean, that was amazing. But, yeah, I thought Phil had an amazing day in comparison to Sunday.
Yeah, and Ian Book was still Ian Book.
Exactly.
I mean,
he's Mr. Reliable.
And when they do the live stuff, I mean, the offense just looks so smooth. Maybe it's because it's purely with all the first-team guys versus Jurkovec being with the second, but he keeps it moving. He keeps the chains moving, just like what we saw from him last year, whereas Jurkovec, there are times when he's running the live stuff where the offense stalls a little bit. But what are we looking for from Ian Book? Can he be more consistent, hitting a couple deep balls? And he had a couple chances yesterday. The best one that I saw, he threw a rope about 25, 30 yards downfield to the far sideline. Boom, it was right there, I think, to Chase Claypool off the top of my head. But there was another chance that he had on a deeper ball where he was looking for Chase Claypool in the end zone, and he underthrew him a little bit, and it was incomplete.
Well, the offense is going to look different depending on which quarterback is back there. Is it the same offense? Yes. The big playability is there when Phil is in there. The consistency is in there when Ian is in there to dumb it down completely. You know what I mean? There were some plays that Phil made where he escaped the pocket, was running up to the line of scrimmage. He thought he was going to tuck it and go, and is able to get the ball out to Tommy Tremble, which would have been a touchdown. You know, big playability. Everybody sucks into him. He finds the guy. That's when he is at his best. When he's able to get outside the pocket and make plays either with his legs or with his eyes down the field, Ian is going to make plays based on his brain, you know, the RPOs, the run-pass option. He's going to put the ball in the right place 95% of the time. That's going to make this offense hum. So the offense is going to look different depending on what quarterback is in there.
Yeah. Absolutely. With Vince D'Addario, Sean Stiers, we are live at Five Star Dive Bar, 526 South Main Street in the former State Theater in downtown Elkhart. Of course, the lunch special, the smoked chicken wings, delicious as always, nice and smoky and tasty. I have had my first couple here before we went on air. I'll be partaking more later. You had the mushroom Swiss cheeseburger that looked like a monster and pretty good as well.
Yeah, I didn't even know how to begin. It was so big and juicy, and I got the onion rings on the side. Oh, my.
That's a way to go.
Oh, my.
The lunch special is a pound of the wings for $7, 2 pounds for $12. They both come with French fries as well. So stop on by and grab some for lunch any day of the week. Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, we will be joined by Chicago Cubs and former Notre Dame pitcher Dave Phelps. That's when we return. Five Star Dive Bar at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. And glad to be joined on the phone right now by a guy who was traded from the Blue Jays to the Chicago Cubs a little bit more than a week ago on trade deadline day. Missed all of last season after undergoing Tommy John surgery when he was in Seattle. Of course, started his career with the New York Yankees, drafted in 2008 out of Notre Dame. Pitched for the Fighting Irish from 2006 through 2008 with a big 2007 season, a 1.88 earned run average, Mr. Dave Phelps. Dave, glad to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me.
It's been a while. Now, when I was communicating with you earlier in the week, there's a musician, right, named David Phelps. Do you know much about David Phelps, the musician?
I know he's got an incredible voice. He's apparently far more famous than I am. It's funny, you see some of the tweets that come out anytime you get traded, and it'll be like, oh, we traded for this guy, and it'll be a picture of him. And he's incredibly successful, and, his Christmas album's pretty good, too.
I might have to check that out sometime. I don't know that I would have, but I did. When I Googled you, I think the last time, it's funny because you texted me the screenshot of that David Phelps, and I had seen that guy, and I'm like, who's this? I'm looking for the man. I'm looking for the guy who's pitching in the big leagues. So that's funny. Of course, you and the Cubs are in Cincinnati right now. What do you ever get out when you guys are on the road, or you just kind of hang out in the hotel all day? What's your routine like during the day when you're on the road?
This morning I was actually grabbing brunch with my dad. My wife and I actually just closed on a house in Pittsburgh not a week and a half ago. My dad was up helping my wife and kids move into the new one. And on his way back to St. Louis, he stopped in Cincinnati for the game last night. We were just grabbing breakfast this morning. Typically when we get into a city, a bunch of the guys will go grab dinner and, try and build some camaraderie of that sort. But, a lot of guys just kind of do their own thing. It's a slightly demanding profession. So we try and get the rest that we can.
Now, you're from St. Louis. So is your wife from Pittsburgh? Is she from back in that area?
She is from Pittsburgh, correct.
Okay. Pittsburgh seemed a little random, so I figured there had to be some spousal connection there.
She's also a Domer.
Okay.
Yeah, I met her my sophomore year, her freshman year. And,
all right.
Yeah, so it was one of the blessed few to meet their spouse at Notre Dame. So it's
there's a few. I know.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Vince.
We've got three kids with a fourth on the way, so
congratulations.
Really tuition goes down a little bit because I know all four of them are probably going to want to go. So, we definitely bleed golden blue, that's for sure.
So you were talking about going out and building camaraderie with the guys. Mm-hmm. What's it like getting traded mid-season like that? What's the Cubs clubhouse like, when you got there? And, obviously there's a bunch of new guys that have shown up in the last couple of weeks.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I've been fortunate now. This is my eighth season in the big leagues, and I've gotten traded in the off season. Now this is the second time I've been traded mid season, and it's different. You when you trade in the off season, you go in, you have spring training to kind of build relationships throughout the month and a half. When you get traded mid season, you're really expected to just fit in right away. That's yeah. one of the tougher things. It's the people that really go unnoticed when you get traded mid season are your wife and your family, the ones that are behind trying to, you know, clean up all the pieces of your life that are, you know, your apartment, all your stuff, like everything that, you know.
Stuff you take for granted.
Exactly. So, I mean, I remember when I got traded to Seattle from Miami, you know, we were an off day, and I got the call at 1 p.m. that I had gotten traded, and they told me, and your flight's at 6 p.m. to head to Seattle. So, an apartment, three kids, and, you know, my wife, I swear when I leave the house, she turns into a superhero and sprouts extra arms. But no, it's the clubhouse here is different than what I was in Toronto. Toronto was a very young, a lot of rookies in the clubhouse here. There's a lot more veteran guys, guys that have, you know, the core of this group was all together in 2016 when they won a World Series. So, you know, they've been through it, and it's a fun atmosphere to be a part of. That's for sure.
Talk with Dave Phelps of the Chicago Cubs and, of course, a Notre Dame alum as well. And so we always hear about Joe Maddon and kind of how he kind of has this different kind of mentality, demeanor, style, whatever you want to call it, than other managers. So how would you describe him in comparison to maybe some other the styles of some other guys that you've had managing you in the big leagues?
Yeah, I think one of the things that Joe does really well is he creates a culture, from what I can tell. I mean, you see it from the outside looking in, but then when you get here, you really kind of understand it. He creates a culture of, you know, letting guys see the best version of themselves and not trying to fit guys into a certain mold. So, the rules are a little bit more lax, but at the same time, it also gives us the opportunity as a clubhouse to kind of police it ourselves. But I think he does a really good job of, I firmly believe in this sport, you know, when guys are allowed to, like, kind of just be themselves, it kind of takes the burden off of some of the stress. And so it's a team sport, but there is a big individual aspect to it that when you're comfortable, I think the best of you shines. I apologize for the noise. I'm walking down the street right now.
No, that's okay. Got to get out in the sunshine every now and then.
Yeah. But I think he does a great job of that. And it's, you know, you've seen it. He's had winning teams everywhere he's been.
So, David, back when you were in Miami, I think you had an opportunity to pitch against Jeff Samardzija. Yeah, I assume you remember that game?
I do. I lost 1-0. I've run into Jeff a handful of times throughout the years. Yeah, that was the first time I'd ever pitched against him. And it's one of those things that it just runs deeper than baseball. I mean, Jeff's locker was right next to mine my freshman year. I guess I should say my locker is right next to his. But
at that point, right?
It's just really cool. Like, I mean, I remember where I was when I was an 18-year-old kid, like getting on campus and just, you know, when he was finally full baseball, like Jeff, you know, going out of his way to help me as a freshman. And it was just, you know, I was sandwiched between Samardzija and Manship my freshman year, and Thornton was right there as well. So at that point, Paul did a really good job of putting me, you know, with some of the upperclassmen, and, you know, it eventually paid off, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a murderer's row right there of pitching. Samardzija, Phelps, Jeff Manship, who, of course, all made it to the big leagues, and you and Shark both in the big leagues still right now. Another guy who just left Notre Dame a couple of years ago, you were teammates with for a little bit in Toronto, Kevin Biggio. What did you think of what you got to see from him in that short time?
Kevin is incredible. I think, you lose sight of the fact, especially at the big league level, of how young he is, just because he's, I mean, you look at the way he handles himself, you look at the at-bats he puts together, it's very professional. Obviously, the pedigree is there, but I think with the names that we had of those young guys that were there, Guerrero, Biggio, and now Bichette, it's just, you one thing that definitely stood out to me with Cavan was just, like, day in and day out, the work he put in, and just on the field, off the field, just how much of a pro he was. It was really impressive. Just a good guy. I mean, it's I really enjoyed my time with him. And, yeah, he's just a really good guy.
Dave, of course, you were traded to the Cubs just a little bit more than a week ago at the deadline. So kind of a two-pronged. One, what was it, a surprise, or did you kind of have an idea you were going to be traded? And two, going from a team that's almost 30 games back in the standings to one fighting for, a Central Division championship, is that kind of a, do you get a kind of a different boost of adrenaline now when you're going out to the mound?
Yeah, so I knew that in the offseason when we signed our deal with Toronto, we knew that if I got back to being healthy, there was a pretty good chance that they'd try and flip me. It's just kind of fit the mold of the deal and, the direction they were going in as a ball club. They were trying to get younger, trying to get controllable pieces. So we knew it was a possibility with that, but with how long it took me to get back as far as just knowing that I was coming off the surgery, we weren't sure how teams were going to approach it. I think it was Monday. Charlie Montoya, the manager in Toronto, tapped me on the shoulder. They did a really good job of, like, informing guys in Toronto if teams were in on them or whatnot. And I hadn't heard anything, so I was like, okay, I'm probably here. Monday, Charlie tapped me on the shoulder. Hey, FLT, two teams are in on you right now. I don't know what teams they are. I just wanted to give you a heads up, which is greatly appreciated because obviously we all have families and
exactly.
And whatnot. But then the next day around 1:20, I think the bus was 2:00. I get a call at 1:20 from Ross, our GM in Toronto, and they felt he just want to let you know we got a deal that we really liked, and we're trading you to Chicago Cubs. At the time, the first thing I did was I was excited because, like you said, they're the first click ball club. I got to the playoffs my rookie year with New York.
Yeah.
And I've been fighting like heck to try and get back ever since. And it's why we play the game. It's a win baseball game and to try and win a World Series. So it's an exciting time to be a Cub right now. It's winning baseball, and it's different than what I was doing, that's for sure.
I'll get you going here in just a second, but you did have Tommy John and missed all of last season. You had Tommy John after your injury in 2017. So everything good with you right now? You feeling pretty good?
Yeah, I feel strong. It's still not quite back to what it was pre-surgery, but it's trending in that direction. I think it's the guys that I've talked to that have had the surgery, they talk about, your first year back, you're going to feel good. You're going to have some ups and downs, as I've certainly had. But they say once you get to have that first full off season of being, out of surgery, is when you really start to see your stuff kind of get back to what it was. So right now, all I'm really focused on is getting outs, whether it's funny. I've told people this a handful of times now. In my career, I've had two different phases. The first, 4 or 5 years, I was throwing 90 to 91. Year window where I was throwing 95, 96. It's a little bit easier to get outs when you're throwing harder, but at the same time, I was able to get outs when I was throwing 90, 91. So it's just a matter of going out and executing pitches and, just making sure we're being smart about it and arm feels on a daily basis. And
that curveball is still looking good, too.
Yeah, it's been a godsend for me throughout my career, that's for sure. But no, like the guys, the staff in Toronto, the staff here in Chicago, they've been fantastic with keeping tabs on me and just, giving me the time and the patience to really just, make sure that I stay healthy now that I'm back going.
Hey, before I let you go, I wanted a couple of your former Notre Dame athletic trainers, Scott Stansberry and Mike Bean, wanted me to be sure and say hello to you. They helped me kind of in the tracking down of Dave Phelps, the Chicago Cubs pitcher, not David Phelps, the musician. But
it's probably easier to get my number than his, that's for sure.
Hey, Dave.
Thank you very much. Say hi to them for me, please.
I will, absolutely. Best of luck to you, Dave. It was great catching up with you. Thanks for taking some time.
Thank you very much, guys.
All right, Dave Phelps of the Chicago Cubs, and again, formerly of Notre Dame baseball as well. Some good stuff, some great insights from him there.
Well, it makes me feel a little older because I remember doing games with you.
That's right.
When he was at Notre Dame, and, you know, he had, what, a 3-4 year minor league career. He's been in the big leagues for 8 years, and that just means we're old.
Yeah,
that's all that means.
You got that right. I mean, he's got 3 kids now, too, with a 4th on the way. I mean, if that doesn't say it.
I wanted to tell him that I felt his pain and that he has a wife that's a superhero because I know how that goes, too.
That's right. So, don't we all?
Yeah, no kidding.
We both do. All right, we're going to take a timeout. We're going to come back and hit a little Notre Dame defense when we return. Thanks again to Dave Phelps for joining us. Leprechaun Lunch, 5-star dive bar downtown Elkhart, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, coming to you again from 5-star dive bar downtown Elkhart. Last few minutes of the show. Vincent, we've got some breaking news from an organization you do some work for, Blue and Gold, and Brian Driscoll.
Brian is reporting via Twitter and on the BGI website that Derek Allen is going to transfer out of Notre Dame, effective immediately.
So one of the safeties, of course, and had found himself lower on the depth chart. I wonder how much of the emergence of Kyle Hamilton plays into that.
Huge, because he is basically running with the third team, essentially. He's he's the fifth safety on the depth chart right now, so that pretty much puts you on the third team and pretty much takes you out of the rotation, essentially. Because, you know, you're going to rotate guys on defense. That just is the way it is. But if you're below the second team, you're probably not going to see that. And he wasn't really rotating in on special teams either, so... You know, from his standpoint, if you're going to transfer and you're going to sit out this year anyway with your current team, you might as well transfer now and sit out the required year and be ready to go next year.
Now, did Brian say if he has a place lined up he's going to go to?
Not yet. I'm sure that'll come out pretty soon. I'm sure he'll start taking visits, et cetera, but nothing yet.
So, again, Brian Driscoll, blueandgold.com, who we have on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat every Tuesday at 6:07, reporting that Derek Allen, safety, is transferring from Notre Dame just first week into fall camp. And I mean, I can see a picture of him that you've got that Brian tweeted out right there. He looks like he's in better shape this fall than he did in the spring. But it seemed like I remember him making a play or two, but again, he was with the third unit for the most part, so...
And he was very, you know, highly regarded coming out of high school.
Yeah, and a guy that a lot of people asked about last year, when are we going to see Derek Allen? That's what happens with the big 4- and 5-star guys. If they don't come out and kind of show it right away, you get a lot of questions about them, and so he's decided he's going to move on.
Yeah, and that's too bad, but you got to do what's best for you, and we wish him all the luck.
So real quickly, we've got a couple of minutes here before we've got to wrap things up. We didn't get to touch on the defense earlier. Some of your thoughts on what we saw at yesterday's practice.
You know, Julian Aquara, I think, had a great game, great practice. I mean, he's quick off the ball, makes things happen. You know, those defensive ends are just – we're going to say good things about them, I think, all the time.
Yeah.
Aloe Gilman, I thought, was all over the field making plays. Again, we kind of talked about him. It's still a pretty high rotation at the linebacker position. I think they're still trying to get things sorted out, and I think that's what Culver was for. So I'm interested to see tomorrow when we go if things are just a little bit more set in stone with that depth chart now that they get back on campus and then things start to settle down a little bit. So that's what I'm going to be looking for. Corner, I thought Dante Vaughn had an exceptional day. I think
looking good.
His physicality at that corner position is amazing. I think any guy that's going to make a catch over him, and there was only one that did the entire practice, and that was Michael Young, who had a great day, they're going to work for it. And he was very impressive.
Yeah, now you mentioned the linebackers, and the notable thing yesterday was Asmar Bilal moving to Buck, Drew White moving into the Mike spot, and Jack Lamb worked in on the nickel package. Lamb, of course, looked good in coverage. That's
right.
His specialty. And the number two unit was Shane Simon at Bunk, Bo Bauer at Mike. So a little shuffling going on there. We'll see if that lasts.
I think you could see any combination of those five guys at any time in there.
All right, so that's going to do it for here today. Our thanks again to Chicago Cubs and former Notre Dame pitcher Dave Phelps for joining us on the show. If you missed that interview, of course, you can find it at WSBTRadio.com and also the WSBT app. Don't forget, Five Star Dive Bar Lunch. They're open for lunch every day. Vince has enjoyed one of those big old burgers. Oh. I enjoy the wings every time we come here. Open at 11 a.m. every day. I will see you tomorrow at another practice.
I will be there and with my clipboard ready to write.
Vince D'Addario, Sean Stiers for Jess Hollis, WSBT South Bend.